Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, and now you can download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you this morning?
I'm great, man. Can't you tell? I got my vim, my vigor, my...
You got your loud on, too, I must say.
I do loud pretty well. It's one of my skills.
Yeah. Anyway...
Just ask my children.
When you're yelling at them, or... I remember the fraternity
chasing
days.
Them down, church chasing them down the street.
Well, I wanted
Spencer
to...
Spencer James, get back in this house right now!
Do you use the middle name when you're mad?
Of course you do. You got to use the middle name when you're mad. That's how they know you're mad.
And if you're Catholic, you get that confirmation name. And if your mom uses all four names, oh, my goodness. We have been getting a bunch of mail, and I wanted to address. We got one a couple of weeks ago. This is an interesting email. I thought I'd bring this out. In the last month, we've got an email from Sweden, Ireland, Japan, and Alaska.
Wisconsin. I mean, we got email. Oklahoma,
I was
Texas,
to, like,
Florida. You were hitting all the corners of the earth, as it were.
Here's from a guy named Eric. Hi guys.
All the corners of the earth, as it were.
It's a round place. hi guys. This is from a guy named Eric. Hi guys. I just started subscribing to the podcast and I love the show. I'm an executive chef in Seward, Alaska, as well as president of our local public radio station. Your show's a refreshing window into the restaurant world outside of Alaska. Keep up the great work, and if I'm in Jersey someday, I'll most definitely stop by your establishment. I'm not counting on that $100 from you, Eric, from Alaska, but I appreciate the email, and you are a restaurant and a radio guy. So
Seward, Alaska, not our customer. We're sure of that. That's okay. Listen to the radio. We like it.
You want to buy something from one of our sponsors in Central Jersey? I don't know. Well, that's fun. Hey, here's some good news. Headline, sweet snacks could be the best medicine for stress. This is Dateline Cincinnati. Researchers from the University of Cincinnati have found that eating or drinking sweets may decrease the production of the stress-related hormone that I can't pronounce, which appears next in this article, which has been linked to obesity.
Hey, we'll just call it the stress-related hormone,
Which has been linked to obesity and the decreased immune response, finding another way to affect the body's response to...
SRH, for those of you not paying attention.
So they say the sugar's not so good for you, but when you eat sugary sweets, and it may reduce your stress. And believe me, I run to food.
Makes you feel better. You run to comfort.
But check this out. They found out that the sweets they're talking about are not the low-calorie sugar substitute variety. We actually found that sugar snacks, not artificially sweetened snacks, are better as self-medications for the two most common types of stress.
Self-medications. That's a great word for that, isn't it?
Psychological and physical stress. And you know what?
I'm not eating an Oreo. I'm self-medicating.
Yeah, I had an uncle who used to say the same thing as scotch. It was medicinal, you know?
I'm self-medicating.
He had his medicine in the morning.
But you know that it's true. You know that if you're really, really stressed, either some really good food and certainly sweets
chocolate
is a great one that will make you feel better.
But
a cookie. When you were a little kid and grandma would give you a cookie, you felt better.
But the interesting
thing... I skinned my knee.
But the interesting...
Here's a cookie.
The interesting thing is that the artificially flavored, like, diet snacks don't cut it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wonder if they don't cut it because the sugar actually does something to relieve stress or... Come on, they're just not that good.
Because we all know that there's no sugar in the
sugar. I guess I'll have a diet snack. Now I feel better. You know.
Snackwells. No, thanks.
Actually, Snackwells I think are pretty good.
Chips Ahoy. Yippee. Girl Scout cookies.
In the non-junk food arena, Northern Spy apples are now in season. Did you know that there are a lot of different kinds of apples, of course, and most of the apples in the United States that you get are harvested once in the fall, and that's it. And apples hold very well, so they're kept. A lot of the apples you get in the supermarkets year round can be 10 months old.
Yeah,
it's last year's apple,
and that's why they taste all mealy and they don't taste right. Frequently, it's because they've been stored for too long or at inappropriate temperatures.
Northern Spies don't hold quite so well, but they're great for baking, and they're great for eating as well. They get picked in October or November, and then so you can still get them fresh like through the winter. Mm-hmm. And so Northern Spy apples are something.
So we can't talk about candy anymore?
We can talk about candy. What do you got?
Actually, I actually have to be careful about what I say about candy. A while back, we were talking about the vending machine here at the radio station, and I commented that there was Toblerone in the vending machine.
Must have been a misship.
And so for Christmas this year, I got like 15 pounds of Toblerone from my brother-in-law.
That's great.
So I have to, A, be careful what I say about my brother-in-law, because now I know he's listening. And B, I really do love Toblerone. There's so if you want to send me a gift, Toblerone. It's a good one.
There was a competing restaurateur who has said a couple times, well, you know, I don't really listen to your show, but last Thursday was a repeat, wasn't it? I love that.
Yeah,
so I guess
it's fun.
It's great. I have more candy news. This is by.
Is this going to be all candy for the whole show? Can we just talk about candy today?
It's a little bit of mind candy for everyone to listen to the show. This is by Maura Kelly Lanan, who's an Associated Press writer, and this is from back in late September. But I've been holding this for just a sweet spot of a topic to fit it in. As lawmakers crack down on the sale of marijuana-flavored lollipops, and other debate is raging between their manufacturers and those of hemp products available.
Now, are they actually marijuana lollipops, or are they just flavored, or are they flavored to taste like marijuana, or are they made from marijuana?
They're flavored to taste like marijuana. The manufacturers of the lollipops say there's no THC in them.
Is this like nicotine gum in order to try and get you to quit marijuana, or is this trying to get you really hooked on marijuana?
No, it's just meant to be like, you know, if you're... You know, don't have the cojones to actually break the law, I guess. I don't know. I don't know. If you want to know what pot tastes like, I never really thought that, and I don't know a lot about drugs, but I never really thought that it was the taste of pot that people were going for.
Is that really why? Hey, get me some of that. Get me some cocaine-flavored
gum. I don't really get that. Well, you know, what's interesting about that is, what's unfortunate is that hemp is in the cannabis family.
Mm-hmm.
And hemp is a very, very useful product. It's stronger than cotton. It's one of the strongest fibers that can grow. And hemp manufacturers, you can't grow hemp in the United States. You can get...
Yeah, but you can buy hemp clothing and things like that are produced outside the country.
And you can buy sterile hemp to manufacture into things, but it's very, very complicated to get it to be sterile. So you can buy the finished products. Hemp is very strong. It's very comfortable. It's very durable. It's, you know, hemp rope. Mm-hmm. All maritime rope used to be made of hemp. And, you know, that's an interesting and unfortunate thing. I mean, you'd have to grow so much hemp to get high. You know, I mean, you'd kill yourself with the smoke before you got high.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Be in a...
But it's hard because the USDA is saying they don't want any of the cannabis available at all in the country. And so that's actually a rather interesting debate.
Well, you know that if they allowed hemp, though, that somebody would abuse that somehow. Somebody would find a way to abuse that.
But what they're saying is that would be very difficult to get enough THC out of hemp.
One more time.
Smoke.
Do you know the American public? Have you seen how creative we can be when we really want something?
Well, the hemp people are really upset about these marijuana-flavored lollipops.
We figured out how to put human cells into a mouse brain. We can figure out how to make hemp get high.
Well, the hemp people are really concerned about this because they're trying to work for the respectability of hemp and hemp products and hemp oil. And they're trying to dissociate themselves from the...
Well, there are people also who say that there's medicinal qualities, and there's a lot of good things that can come from hemp.
Well, and also there's medicinal qualities to marijuana. That's a whole separate debate. Here's a quote from the Illinois Attorney General, Lisa Madigan. She's issued a subpoena seeking information on the advertising and marketing practices of chronic candy. Just because something isn't illegal doesn't make it right. We have coming up Ron Cooper from Del Maguey Mezcal, which is a very interesting producer of an artisanal Mexican product, joining us after the break. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Shadow, Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. We have with us a special guest today. Ron Cooper is the founder of Del Maguey Mezcal. Del Maguey is a company that brings in some mezcals from Oaxaca, which is a region in Mexico. And mezcal is You may know tequila. Tequila is a specific type of mezcal, but there are other mezcals as well. And this is very interesting because here we have an industry and a production that's dominated by large companies, large factories, making fairly homogenous product. You rarely, you know, we talk about wines from small producers or, you know, chickens or pigs from a certain farm. Now, these are mezcals, which are the same type of spirit as tequila, which is a type of mezcal, from individual villages, made in an artisanal way.
A state bottled, small production.
And I
mezcal.
Think that we found these years ago. We've carried them for years, and they're really remarkable and wonderful. We have four of them in our restaurants. And, Ron, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks. I've never had a chance to thank you personally for being one of our first promoters.
Well, I think you're more than welcome. Thanks for making this stuff. Now, this is revolutionary. And you know what? It, even if you don't particularly care for spirits or whatever, this is a restaurant show. We talk a lot about great stuff. And stuff that's made by real people, individually handcrafted stuff.
Ron, are you a real person?
I'm a real person.
Tell us now.
Yes, absolutely.
And what's interesting about this this mezcal is that it's made by individuals in an old-fashioned way. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what sets Del Maguey Mezcal apart from
the big houses,
all of its competitors?
Okay. What's really interesting is that these are made by Zapotec Indian farmers. In the state of Oaxaca, there are 16 indigenous languages that are before Spanish that are still in existence.
And yeah, you know, that's I think it's very interesting because I think that people don't realize. People just think, I think a lot of Americans think that Mexico is just a Spanish-speaking place. But we have actually several Mexican people who work for us, and some are from different Indian tribes, and they speak different languages.
Pre-Hispanic languages.
Than the other people in my kitchen.
Absolutely.
Or their primary language, anyway.
Yeah, and what's really interesting is that in the state of Oaxaca, there are 9 different ecologic zones, from jungles with parrots and monkeys to high mountains that have snow and pine trees, and beautiful valleys that have just excellent soil for and the right humidity for growing maguey, which everyone in the world knows of as agave.
And agave is what is the basic fruit from which we produce tequila.
And tell us what agave is. I mean,
agave is a Greek word that means noble, and it was given by scientists to the 420-odd species of a very large succulent that Americans know of as century plant 100 years ago. The only people that refer to agave are people that design labels and send out tequila and mezcal out into the world. The Indians down there refer to the plant as maguey, except in tequila. And in the region of tequila, when you point at the plant, the people say, oh, mezcal. So they call the plant mezcal in tequila. Anyway, it's a ritual beverage down in Oaxaca. Every funeral, every 8-day wedding, every 3 or 4 day baptism or confirmation, birthdays, consolations when a bride is stolen, they all use ritually mezcal in their ceremonies.
And I think this is very important because I think we in the United States have a view of tequila and mezcal as being that stuff that got you really drunk in college. And we think of some drunken college student, standing on a balcony waving a bottle of tequila.
Don't talk about me like that.
Ken, well, it has been misused like that by certain people in this room many, many, many years ago.
We all have started that way.
It's a beverage with a 500-year history that where it's from. You know, in my culture, in Irish culture, if you go over someone's house, most people will have a bottle of Irish whiskey somewhere. And like you said, if there's a funeral, if there's someone you haven't seen in a long time, if there's a wake, if there's a wedding, if there's a special occasion or a guest
festival or a carnival or a party or anything.
You pull out this, and it's a part of the history of where my family is from with Irish whiskey. So you say it's a ritual beverage in Oaxaca. I mean, It has a long history in Oaxaca?
Yeah, I mean, from the Spanish conquest on, you know, so...
So from, like, the 1500s we've been having tequila?
1516, we've been drinking mezcal, yeah.
Is it that, I mean, now, it took the Spanish to bring distillation to the Native Americans. They didn't have that initially, did they?
Well, not in high volumes, but there are now documents that are surfacing that show that the indigenous peoples knew and practiced distillation.
Really?
Yeah. Before the conquest, the traditional beverage was pulque, which is just a ferment like a wine, mm-hmm. from a giant agave plant.
And then they learned, but they may have been able to distill this before the Spanish got here. I want to find out more about that in just a moment. Our guest is Ron Cooper. He's the founder of Del Maguey Mezcal in Oaxaca, Mexico, and we'll be talking about pre-Spanish Indian rituals with the agave plant in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25. You know, Mark and I are always saying that long-term, good environmental policy and good economic policy are one and the same. And that's not just for the government, it's also for small business and homeowners just like you. To help us put our money where our mouth is, we called E2ECTA. E2ECTA uses a team of specialists to find practical ways for your business or home to conserve energy and even to generate green energy that the utility company then has to buy back from you. That generates a different kind of green for your bottom line. We've gone solar at our restaurants. We're now producing cheap, non-polluting electricity, and with the help of E2ECTA, we did it for very little money. The government programs available to get you set up are unbelievable. We're talking about grants here, not loans, but grants. E2ECTA will help you find the right programs for you, and they'll do the paperwork. You keep the profits. It's a no-brainer, people. For lower energy usage, more profits for yourself, call E2ECTA at 908-359-9300 or click on their link at restaurantguysradio.com. E2ECTA for total energy solutions.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Mezcal and Francis Schott. Today's guest, Ron Cooper of Del Maguey Mezcal from Oaxaca, Mexico.
Now, we were talking about pre-Spanish Native American use of the agave plant before the break. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about the pulque and how it was used before the Spanish?
Pulque is a ceremonial beverage that was legally controlled previous to the conquest, and you could drink as much as you wanted. You were encouraged to drink as much as you wanted on feast days and days celebrating historic battles.
But how was it controlled? When were you not allowed to drink it?
Well, you were not allowed to drink it on non-feast days, and if you were found drinking it, you were shamed, you were spanked publicly, your hair was cut the first time. The second time, you were sacrificed.
Well, that's
so
quite
severely controlled.
So
now,
my goodness.
But once you passed childbearing age, as a retirement gift, you could drink it any time you wanted.
Wow!
So to this day, in our villages, the elder women in the morning, leaving the market, stop in for a morning medicina, a 1 ounce sip of a mezcal with herbaceous roots infused in it.
And they take it like medicine, don't they?
Yes, they do. And it eases their arthritis or whatever ails them.
My grandfather used to say the same thing to my grandmother in the
morning.
That's
it. You know, a little sugar.
He'd come down smelling of Irish whiskey in the morning.
We were talking about that earlier. It's a little bit of medicine.
Now, but so this was a legally controlled alcoholic substance before the Spanish arrived in Mexico.
Absolutely. And pulque, interestingly, has a very low alcohol, like 4%, but it's mildly hallucinogenic if you drink more than a quart of it.
Wow.
So, if you drink more than a quart of it, okay.
Yes. So anyway, it's very interesting. But I want to get back to these farmers that make mezcal.
Well, I do too. And the mezcal that you can buy is called Del Maguey. There are a number. They keep the individual village mezcal mm-hmm. separate. We carry four of them at our
restaurant.
And
they're all very interesting. They're all very different. And I definitely want to talk some more about how different they all
and,
are.
And they're not inexpensive. They're a wonderful gift for somebody. But, I mean, they're along the lines of like a fine single malt scotch or a great brandy or cognac. And they're for sipping. And you can try those at our restaurant. We're going to tell you how you can get them. You can link to our website, and we'll hook you up with the website for Del Maguey. And we're going to be talking more with Ron Cooper about these individual artisanal products when we come back from the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott, and I'm here with Mark Pascal. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey, and we're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every weekday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, and you can also reach us through our website at restaurantguysradio.com, and we also podcast through Podcast Alley and iTunes, and you can find us there all over the world. Our guest today is Ron Cooper. He's the founder of a company bringing in the most unique mezcals available in the United States. And mezcal, you may be familiar with a type of mezcal called tequila, and this is not from the region of tequila. This is mezcal from a region called Oaxaca, where he brings in individual mezcals made by small producers. And why don't you tell us a little bit about how the mezcals that you bring in are different than what Americans might be used to?
Well, I used to sit in the afternoon and sip with a friend in Oaxaca City, the capital of the state of Oaxaca, and began to go out dirt roads on adventures and ask Zapotec Indians walking down the road, where's the best? And I didn't say mezcal, and they would go, oh, and they'd start pointing and speaking in Zapotec. I started finding these farmers making the mother of all tequilas and mezcals, the 16th century way, and bringing them back to the city in a water bottle, and shared them with my weaver friend.
So these were just pretty much glorified stills?
Oh, it's just like...
Pachin or moonshiners.
Just, yeah, absolutely. Just they look absolutely the same as stills from southeastern United States. And they're just out there in the open in fields around farms, and they're made just for the ritual use of the local villages. So I started bringing them back, and people in the city said, where did you get this? And I realized very fast that kilometer by kilometer, the closer a good mezcal got to the city, the more adulterated and watered down it became.
Oh, how fascinating.
So I made it my mission to make it available to me and my friends in the United States.
To drive one quick trip without stopping so nobody could bastardize.
Adulterated, absolutely, absolutely.
Now, you said something, you had very charged words there, and I want to go back to them. You want to say they were made in the 16th century way. Can you briefly tell us how mezcal is made today, and then tell us how the mezcals that you bring into the United States are made?
Sure. Well, first of all of Del Maguey's single village mezcals are completely organic. We've just gotten organic certifiers down there in Oaxaca, so we're going to start the process.
Excellent.
All right. The hearts, the Maguey are harvested at peak maturity, not broad harvested like a field of wheat, one at a time, each heart. The farmer is roaming through mountains and valleys and looking at his plantings, and he's identifying them and say, oh, that one's going to be ready in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm. That's the
way we would pick a tomato if it were in your backyard.
Absolutely.
Or the way that top-quality wines are hand-picked. They say the grapes are hand-harvested as opposed to machine-harvested.
Absolutely. So these things take from 6 to 12 years, depending on the conditions where they grow.
Now think about that for a moment. Your grapes, they're an annual cycle. So and the vines are sort of in place, and it takes a while to get a vine up to production. But each agave plant takes 6 years before you can harvest it. That's
minimum.
Quite a constraint. Minimum,
minimum.
Right? That's quite a constraint. So how are the big factory mezcals made as opposed to how your mezcals are made? What's different
the
process?
They buy anything they can get their hands on, preferably younger plants, 3-year-old plants, so that their mechanical machines can shred them once they roast.
Okay.
The hearts are put into big stainless steel pressure cookers.
This is in the commercial production.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
They're steam and pressure cooked for about 8 to 12 hours. Out come the hearts. They're shredded. They are pressed, and the juice is extracted. Water is added. Chemical ferment accelerators are added. They ferment in 2 days. They are put into column stills. They're double distilled. In 4 hours, they get about 500 to 1,000 liters. Flavorings are added. Water is added. Mm-hmm. Stabilizers like glycerin and caramel.
Sounds very appealing.
And coconut oil are added to give back mouthfeel.
We should also talk just for 1 second about the coloring, and you mentioned.
I just want to say, after that litany of things, I now understand why I get a headache if I have any of that stuff.
Well, a tequila or a mezcal, what makes it turn yellow?
Well, first of all, the liquid is very pale green when it's mm-hmm. distilled. And if it's poorly made, it turns straw yellow itself within the first year.
Mm-hmm.
Wood aging is something that softens and sweetens something that may be a little bit bitter and a little bit harsh.
So it's a way to doctor it up.
That's a way to make it palatable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, before the segment is out, I want to be able to compare and contrast the difference. How are the Del Maguey tequilas made? Or the Del Maguey mezcals made?
All right. The most important ingredient that I have found in these is time. They are so slow, it is ridiculous. The hearts are harvested. They are roast in the earth over hot rocks that have been heated by a wood fire. They're covered with woven palm mats and earth. They roast slow for 5 days.
So instead of being put in a steam pressure cooker, you bury them in the ground with rocks.
Right.
Something tells me that's a more expensive way to go about it.
And
well,
rocks
very
are very
slow.
Expensive. Quit it. That's
very
not true.
Slow. Now imagine starting to make a beverage with a boiled onion, and imagine starting to make a beverage with a roast caramelized onion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The same materia prima, treated a different way. One is has an onion slice. The other one is really sweet and caramely, okay?
Uh-huh.
All right, well, so our hearts start out smoky from being in the earth, earthy, and very sweet. These are set aside in the shade for 7 days to begin to ferment naturally with airborne microbes, okay?
Mm-hmm. So that's like a great Belgian beer. It's a natural fermentation.
Exactly. Or even some great wines are done with a natural spontaneous fermentation from indigenous yeast.
Well, think about the dust that you get on all grapes, okay?
Right.
That's not dust. Those are microbes
right.
waiting for the skin to break to get in and eat the sugars, mm-hmm. convert them to alcohols.
And just so you know, what makes that so interesting and what makes that desirable is what the factory farms do, what the factory producers do, is they inoculate or they put in mm-hmm. their own very safe strain of yeast.
So it'll taste exactly the same all the time.
And what happens when you allow wild fermentation, you sort of take a chance because there's all different kinds of yeast out there in the air, the ambient yeast. And if you have all these different yeast acting on your wine or your tequila or your mezcal, It makes it very complex because you have all these different kinds of yeast going up, but it's a huge pain in the butt because you have to watch it a lot more closely.
Well, you could have bad yeasts, but which can get in there at the same time. But they add so much more character and so much more complexity and so much more depth of flavor than by just using one strain of inoculated yeast all the time.
You guys have got it right on. I've only seen in 25 years, I've only seen one still ferment or dead ferment. So yes, it takes from 7 to 30 days to ferment naturally, 2 days if you ferment with, accelerators or cultivated yeast. Then the mash is put into clay or copper alembic stills and distilled very slowly. These Zapotec farmers that have had a first-grade education close their eyes, and it's like they're looking at atomic molecules, and they say, cook it too fast, burn the flavor. Mezcal and water don't mix. And by golly, these guys do slow 100-liter, 25-gallon, 24-hour distillation twice.
And this is a huge difference between making something in a factory and making something by an individual, and it expresses itself in the bottle. We're going to talk
like a chef.
We're going to talk more about this with Ron Cooper from Del Maguey Mezcal from Oaxaca, Mexico, in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45. Hi. This is Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants and also of the Restaurant Guys radio show. You know, one of the best things about the restaurant business is the creative side of it. Coming up with big ideas and then turning those concepts into reality is awesome. It's what I love most about what I do. But it can't stop there. If you can't communicate exactly what it is you're doing, then you'll find yourself standing alone in your dining room, just you and your big ideas. The Mardini Group can help you get your ideas across to others. The Mardini Group is a boutique graphic design firm, and they do extraordinary work. We use them, and as you know, we only use the best. Whether it's menu design, product packaging, a corporate report, promo material, a homepage, or an awesome logo for a brand new project like Catherine Lombardi, we turn to the Mardini Group. Some small business owners don't realize how important it is to have a strong visual identity. Without it, you come across as less than professional. That can cost you trust, and that lowers your bottom line. First impressions count for a lot, and that's why you need the Mardini Group. Go to RestaurantGuysRadio.com and click on the Mardini Group link, or call them at 718-694-9944. The Mardini Group for graphic design, 718-694-9944.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
You're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And we're talking with Ron Cooper, who's the founder of Del Maguey Mezcal in Oaxaca, Mexico. We were talking about the mezcals that he brings in from Oaxaca come from small producers, Native American producers, made on an individual basis. Are the producers that produce the mezcal that you bring in, are they better off selling to you and getting their product to market in America than the people who are selling to the large factories down there?
Absolutely. We pay 5 to 20 times more than the going rate. The commercial people down there buy from 20 or 30 different farmers, pour it all into one vat, which cancels the regional flavors, add water, and bottle.
Well, tell us about the individual. Tell us about a couple of the individual villages of Mezcal that you sell.
Okay.
You sell different ones.
Santa Catarina Mina, St. Catherine of the Mines, 72-year-old Florencio Carlos has been making mezcal for 52 years. He says mezcal is delicate.
Mm-hmm.
He's so careful when he makes it in clay stills with bamboo tubing that his helpers come around, and if they've washed their hands with a soap that has a perfume in it, he sends them home. Okay?
Right.
This guy is the most opinionated. It takes 3 hours to say anything. He just has so much to say, but it turns out that everything is true.
Now, yeah. what we're talking about here with Ron Cooper from Del Maguey Mezcal is we're talking about the single village mezcal and each one having its own character and each one being bottled separately and showing its own flavors.
So what are the flavors? You know, so we get the Minero from this one village. Now you
right.
have another village.
Yeah, but Minero has got incredibly huge acids, and it's the same thing in wines that make you salivate and send a message to your brain: I'm hungry.
Mm-hmm.
So our mezcals are mezcals. These mezcals made by farmers go so well with food; it's incredible.
I would agree.
Anyway, the overtones of fig and pineapple and banana and different fruits that pear and apple that come out in these different villages are due to the microclimate, the altitude, the soil, the water of the village, and the hand of the maker.
Well, okay, so, do me a favor here.
Yes.
I'm having a pre-dinner mezcal,
mm-hmm.
and I want something that's going to whet my appetite. What should I have?
Well, I like to start with, when I'm pairing food, I like to start with a real clean mezcal, like San Luis del Rio, which is very high altitude, 8,000 mm-hmm. foot. It is very subtle. All the fruit overtones in it are totally subtle. So it's like starting with a very clean vodka or gin, yet it has this rich, smooth sweetness that comes naturally from the production.
Very nice. Now, okay, I've gone through my whole dinner, and I want to finish my evening with a single vineyard mezcal. Which one am I going to have?
Well, what we like to finish with is Toba La, made from the wild mountain agave, that has a completely unique flavor. The Toba La plant only grows in the shade of oak trees like truffles. There's only 500 bottles a year. It's won the World Spirits Championship twice.
I know who's getting one next week.
highest score ever in tequila or mezcal. And when you mention Toba La to a Zapotec Indian, they go, ah, the stuff my ancestors drank before they planted all this other stuff down below.
Wow.
Either that or our triple distilled Pechuga, which is a miracle. Pechuga is put back in the still only in November, December, when the wild mountain apples and plums are ripe, and it's distilled a third time with a handful of almonds, two handfuls of uncooked white rice, some pineapples, big red macho plantain bananas, all wild, all criollo, not farmed.
And what's this called again?
Pechuga. And in the air of the still, a chicken breast on the rib cage with the skin removed, washed 3 hours in running water, is hung in the air, and this concoction is distilled the third time. And what comes out are 490 bottles of one of the five most complex spirits in the world.
That's
incredible. So there are 490 bottles of
this
produced.
For the world.
Yes. I mean, I knew you were producing a small amount of stuff, but, you know, that's, what, 45 cases of mezcal?
That's right.
Oh, that's incredible. Hey, listen, Ron, your stuff is really amazing. We're going to put a link up on our website, restaurantguysradio.com, to yours. And if you found any of this interesting, I really recommend going to the website and learning more about this. If you're interested in wine or food or spirits, there's a rich history here, and there's more to tequila than most people see that meets the eye. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today, Ron.
Thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ron. Very good talking to you today.
That was
Great
Ron Cooper. That's Ron Cooper. He's the founder of Del Maguey Mezcal. They bring their mezcals to the United States. They're the finest mezcal product available in the United States. They're a little hard to come by, but not impossible. If you go to our website, we'll help you figure out how to get some. And if you have a real spirits lover and you want to surprise somebody, I've done that on more than one occasion in my life. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark Mezcal and Francis Shaw. Today we had the good fortune of speaking to Ron Cooper from Del Maguey Mezcal from Oaxaca, Mexico. And really, really interesting. He's doing these estate-bottled single village mezcal. And again, we talked about this a little bit at the beginning of the show, but just to clear it up for everybody, mezcal, tequila is a type of mezcal.
It's from a
region of Mexico. And it's supposed to be, when you say tequila on a bottle, it's supposed to be a delineation of quality, but I think it's really gone the other way.
Well, the tequila has to be from a certain type of agave, and it has to be from within the confines of the region called tequila in Mexico. You can make mezcal anywhere. Mezcal is what the basic spirit is called. And what's interesting is what Ron talked about is that the agave plant or the maguey plant takes 3 years minimum to be mature, maybe up to 6 years to be mature. Well, there's been a shortage of the agave plant in tequila, and so they've changed the laws, really. And if you buy tequila, you can have up to 49% other spirits.
Right.
So if it doesn't say 100% agave tequila, you know, that it can have like 49% grain alcohol and 51% mezcal. And that's something to really watch out for, because that's not so good for
it's
you.
It's really not. And the other thing you need to watch out for is, and we started to talk about the coloring, how you get a gold tequila. How you get a gold tequila traditionally from a good tequila producer is you get it from wood.
Right. Or an age.
Okay, or age, right, especially aged in wood. How you get a really bad tequila to be golden in color is...
FD&C yellow number 5.
You put yellow number 5 in it, and you make it golden, and ew.
Yeah, and you know, I think that what's really interesting is...
Ew! Did I say ew?
There are some high-end tequilas out there, and I won't name them because I don't have an axe to grind, but there's some pretty high-end, big-brand tequilas out there that are expensive, that really are very chemical and are very off, but to find a great mezcal like Del Maguey... Mm-hmm. And they're not inexpensive, but right.
There's another great one out there called El Tesoro that we like a lot.
El Tesoro de Don Felipe, is also
really
pretty
good. Makes some great stuff.
Well, anyway, I hope you've enjoyed the last hour talking about indigenous production of mezcal tequila from Oaxaca. Boy, this has been an egghead show, and I think I'm going to go have myself a margarita for lunch. I'm Francis Schott.
I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.